From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks for being here, everybody. Brian Kilmeade Show. It's one of these shows I hope to get everything in, or at least touch on the topics that mean the most. Congressman John James will be here from Michigan. How does he feel about the president caving again to the extremists in his state? Because he's in danger of losing that state. He also wants to win re-election. It's going to be tough. And we have Darryl Johnston with us today. This is a big week for us. We launch at KLIF over in Dallas. And Darryl Johnston, three Super Bowls there, now running the UFL, as well as a Fox broadcaster. And then we have Brett Baer standing by. And we have a lot of news to get to. And meanwhile, the president of the United States not around in San Francisco, not touring the slums and the streets and the homeless problem and the carjacking issues. He's going to be making a lot of money with rich people. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
All these cases, for slightly different reasons, are collapsing. But the one thing they do have in common is that they were all brought as an effort to interfere with the election, to try to throw their chief political opponent, President Trump, in jail for the rest of his life.
That's Eric Schmidt, former attorney general of Missouri, now senator from Missouri. All Trump cases have one thing in common. They were all brought in an effort to interfere in the election, as he said. The Trump trials are back in action. Stormy tries to steady her flighty ship, and the former president gets good news about the other court cases we'll review and preview.
Number two.
Consumer confidence, maybe no surprise, is near a two-year low. With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
We've already turned it around. Look, the polling data has been wrong all along.
Really? 2024 heating up as Joe Biden gets grilled on CNN on his real economic record while making up stories about his life while raising big bucks in a godforsaken San Francisco.
Number one.
I've made it clear to Bibi and the War Cabinet they're not going to get our support if, in fact, they go in these population centers.
So it's not over your red line yet?
Not yet, but it's we've held up the weapons.
We've held up the weapons. So that's called crossing your red line. Unless you're talking about a different red line. Betrayal, simple as that. Biden brags about holding back armaments from Israel in the middle of their war for survival, as pays homage to the radicals on college campuses and his extreme left. The latest on all his trials. Brett Baer, a lot of moving parts today. I know you'll be covering it all. Thanks for starting your day with us.
Morning.
All right, first off, your thought. Can put in perspective how rare it is for an American president to cut off Israel to a degree in the middle of a war.
Extremely rare, and to the point where you had a lot of Democrats saying, oh, those stories aren't true.
Yeah.
At the beginning, when the first stories came out. No, that's not true. And, you know, kept on digging and said, pretty sure it's true. From the podium, Kirby, you know, didn't confirm, either did Karine Jean-Pierre. Then the president, I mean, just flatly said, we've held the weapons. Now, I wouldn't be surprised to find that little snippet of a soundbite in an ad to a heavy Jewish population in a swing state, because it is really rare, and a lot of people are puzzled by it.
Puzzled by it, to say the least. So Lloyd Austin's got to define it. Evidently, these 2,500-pound bombs have precision elements to it, and that should be used in Rafah if they wanted to go from the sky. But, Brett, let's just paint it what it is. The last two battalions of Hamas are in Rafah. The hostages are in Rafah. Sinwar, who designed this whole operation, he's the bin Laden of this operation, in Rafah. They cannot allow these guys and Hamas to stay alive or to be a win or reconstitute in Gaza. Of course they have to finish the job in Rafah. What do you think the goal now is with the president? What am I missing?
Yeah, well, here's another element to it. I mean, we were sending precision-guided bombs. Rafah is about 25 miles, square miles. That's about a third of the size of Washington, D.C. Gaza, you know, is about 141 square miles. But anyway, it is tiny. If you want to protect civilians and this operation has to move forward in the Israelis' minds, isn't it important to have precision-guided bombs?
Yeah.
Instead of just dropping bombs? It seems there's not a lot of sense to it, and I think there's going to be a big pushback here. I mean, you saw Senator John Fetterman on Special Report. You've seen other Democrats come out and have concerns. I think it will get louder, and I don't think the Israelis are going to stop.
I'm going to have Joe Manchin on Saturday show, One Nation, and I'm pretty sure he sees eye to eye with Fetterman. In fact, here's the cut from your great interview.
I don't know why they seem to, I'm not even sure what they're really, you know, protesting about. If you ask them, they're not really sure. They can't, you know, and now they're not talking about ceasefires anymore. And now they're talking about divesting and harming Israel on that. It's crazy. And they really just broke the mold yesterday when they were had protesters at Auschwitz yesterday during the Holocaust, the 2 mile walk thing. I mean, like, how much more tasteless and disgusting that could be. And as I said this, that it's actually working against peace in Gaza. And Hamas is convinced that they've won the PR war. And they keep seeing all these kinds of protests across the nation on these campuses. And it's not helpful, but it's actually works against peace, I think.
So again, it's straddling the line. I'm gonna support Ukraine, but I'm not gonna give them the weapons they want. Eventually, give them most of what they want. They still don't have F-16s. They still don't have trained pilots. And then with Israel, we'll support you, but we're gonna stop you from really retaliating against Iran. We're gonna criticize you for the way you're fighting this war, and then we're going to stop shipments. But our support is ironclad. To me, this is not the leadership that America's used to.
Listen, whoever wrote the speech at the Holocaust event for President Biden is not the same person who's advised him in that last interview with CNN or his policy, because the speech that he delivered was very clear and very, you know, pointed. It was not equivocating. It was all Hamas. That's where the onus is. They have to release the hostages, all of that. And then one day later, confirmation from the president's mouth that they've stopped the weapons. So listen, this is a major, major deal. I think that it's going to have implications that go beyond what we currently see. And I do think Israel's still moving forward.
So the two candidates to be the next prime minister, if Netanyahu is to lose when they call elections, would be Lapid or Benny Gantz. And both of them have no criticism of the way Benjamin Netanyahu is fighting this war. So you could make him the bad guy, but it's just not, you're not putting the time in to find out what Israelis would do different. They're all in for eradicating this problem. And when you talk about a two-state solution, you haven't really talked to Israelis lately. They've given multiple opportunities over the course of the last 25 years for a two-state solution, including on its creation. And the Palestinians want one state, just them. Here's Lloyd Austin trying to define further and defend his position yesterday on Capitol Hill. He wasn't winning anybody over, but here's him trying. Cut six.
Certainly would like to see no major combat take place in Rafah, but certainly our focus is on making sure that we protect the civilians. And we've not made a final determination on how to proceed with that shipment. And I would highlight that this shipment doesn't have anything to do with the supplemental appropriations that you just helped us get.
Yeah, so this was scheduled a long time ago. So that's where we stand. So by the way,
it is worse.
But right now, we'd understand, Brett, this has been cut off, correct?
Yeah, I mean, yes. from the president's mouth. I mean,
you heard it,
cut and dry. And so when that happens, that's the mandate from the president. So I think that there is no daylight in the Israeli war cabinet, left, center, right, about the need to eradicate Hamas so it doesn't happen again. Bibi Netanyahu's biggest problem is that it happened, period, and that they feel like Israel had turned, you know, and was not aware that the intelligence did not prevent October 7th on the front end. It's not that he's somehow not doing the right thing as far as going after Hamas. And the other thing to note is that, you know, the neighborhood is not that pro-Palestinian either. They're concerned about civilian casualties, but they're pretty fed up with the Hamas back and forth on ceasefires and are concerned that negotiating with a terrorist organization is not going to lend to a success.
So just to show you what President Biden is dealing with on his extreme left, Rashida Tlaib, Cori Bush yesterday on Capitol Hill, having rallies for the Palestinians, for Hamas to a degree, because they were voted in by the Palestinians, and for the protesters. Listen to her, cut 19.
It is incredibly disturbing, though, you all, that my colleagues are so quick to denounce the student protesters, but are silent about these young people, about why they are protesting.
Goes on, cut 21.
I wanted all the Democrats and Republicans to know they cannot arrest their way out of this growing dissent. Every corner of our country, people of different faiths, different colors, skin, ethnicity, backgrounds of different types are coming together and saying Palestinians deserve to live.
Good luck with that, Joe. You might as well just stand for your convictions, because you're never going to please anyone. You'll end up pleasing no one. I want to talk more about what the president got yesterday. He got something I know we all want, and that's to sit down with President Biden. You constantly asked. President Biden got some, I guess, a surprisingly tough question, many of them. Here's what he said, cut 25.
It's also true right now, Mr. President, that voters by a wide margin trust Trump more on the economy. They say that in polls. And part of the reason for that may be the numbers. And you're aware of many of these, of course. The cost of buying a home in the United States is double what it was when you look at your monthly costs from before the pandemic. Real income, when you account for inflation, is actually down since you took office. Economic growth last week, far short of expectations. Consumer confidence, maybe no surprise, is near a two-year low. With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
So his face was on the floor. Here's his answer, cut 26.
We've already turned it around. Look at the Michigan survey. For 65% of American people think they're in good shape economically. They think the nation's not in good shape, but they're personally in good shape. The polling data has been wrong all along. You guys do a poll with CNN. How many folks you have to call to get one response?
Okay, go after the polling and the methods. That's an interesting take. Your thought?
Listen, he has to say something. At least he did the interview, and that's a... you know, a step in the right direction. We have asked. Actually, Brian, we have asked every week since he won South Carolina.
Wow.
How about that?
That's a record. And the answer has been no.
Yeah, we'll see scheduling. You know, we've had a couple of flat no's, and then mostly it's, you know, it's in the queue sort of thing. You know, we've tried to say we'll go on the campaign trail. We've offered town halls. We've offered a lot of things, and we haven't done it. Listen, to Erin Burnett's credit, she
did a great job.
Some really good questions in a really good way. In other words, pointed but fair. And I think that's the essence of a good interview. So I applaud her.
So President Trump's about to speak now, right before he goes into court. We'll take some of those excerpts in a moment. But you can't have a Joe Biden speech without a head scratcher. And here we go. Let me see. I'm in Wisconsin. People of Wisconsin like the Packers. I have an idea. Let's make up this story. Cut 36.
My theology professor at the Catholic school I went to was a guy named Riley, last name. And he had been drafted by the Green Bay Packers. And he decided to become a priest before that, so he didn't go. But every single solitary Monday that Green Bay won, we got the last period of the day off. Now, we Catholics call that indirect bribery, but it worked.
Okay. No one can verify this story.
Yeah. Well, this may be why the White House is trying to shorten speeches and take out the ad libs. It seemed like that was in the prompter, though. So I don't know. A lot of these stories, you have to kind of go back and dig into them. And, you know, there's a kernel of truth sometimes, but it's, you know, about the audience. So it's his style. It's how he's been, and it's gotten a little bit more pronounced in the last few months.
And I think they were afraid because we should have stopped him at Corn Pop. You know, as soon as we couldn't verify that, we should have pulled back from the anecdotal information, especially after his uncle got eaten by cannibals, but he didn't. So the president of the United States is going to be on trial today. So far, Brett, real quick, your take on the other three trials, they seem to be in hyperspace. Have you talked to people that think that any of these trials, aside from this one, the one in New York, is going to take place before November?
The only question mark is January 6th and where that stands and how that proceeds. I think a lot of it depends on what the Supreme Court comes back with, and that is on hold. But clearly, the documents case, that judge is frustrated by what she has seen in the filings and is delaying to try to get a lot of different pretrial motions taken care of. I don't think it's done, but it's definitely delayed indefinitely. The Georgia case seems like it's falling apart, and that appeal will be right to the heart of the case about Fani Willis. And then you have Manhattan will be done, obviously. But I think the big one is January 6th.
Brett Baer, thanks for starting your day with us. Appreciate it. See you tonight at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
You got it. The former president of the United States just spoke before heading into court. It's day two with Stormy Daniels. We'll talk about that, find out what he said, bring back the highlights, and talk to John James and Darryl Johnston. Don't move.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
This is Jimmy Failla, inviting you to join me for Fox Across America, where we'll discuss every single one of the Democrats' dumb ideas. Just kidding. It's only a 3-hour show. Listen live at noon Eastern or get the podcast at foxacrossamerica.com.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
What Biden is doing with respect to Israel is disgraceful. If any Jewish person voted for Joe Biden, they should be ashamed of themselves. He's totally abandoned Israel, and nobody can believe it. I guess he feels good about it because he did it as a political decision. You have to do the right decision, not the political decision. But he did a very bad thing. I just want to let you know that we've just filed a major motion in the appellate division concerning the absolutely unconstitutional gag order, where I'm essentially not allowed to talk to you about anything meaningful that's going on in the case. And many good things are going on with the case. It shouldn't have been filed.
All right. That was the President of the United States moments ago. And he's talking about he's just very critical, as expected, of the decision to cut off arms to Israel because they don't want him to go into Rafah. It is absolutely insane. Remember who the bad guys are. Remember that how the Palestinian people greeted those hostages as they were ripped out of their homes, ripped away from their families, some beat up, raped, and had in one case, we saw half an arm taken off. They were treating those hostages, punching, spitting on them. That's how they were treated. 80% of the people in the Palestinian territories support the operation on October 7th. So get out of the way, because either turn over the hostages, turn over the Hamas leaders, or get out of the way, or you'll be caught in fire. That's what Biden should be saying.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
He appeases Iran and criticizes Israel. It should be exactly the opposite of that. And now he's appeasing these anti-Semitic, hateful, pro-Hamas crowds. You know, I went to Columbia University myself to see this on the ground. These students are waving flags for Hezbollah and Hamas, terrorist organizations. Some of them deny that October 7th happened and all right. The tragedies there. I mean, it's an absolute maddening set of circumstances, and the president is refusing to speak with moral clarity to the issue, and that's why it continues to grow across the country.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can listen to people all you want, but you know you have an ally, you have an ally. If you don't like the way they're fighting, I would like to see somebody from a military war college comment on it, not Anthony Blinken, who usually plays lead guitar or rhythm guitar in a garage band. Certainly not Jake Sullivan. I don't think he wears body armor or has ever been in fatigues. And Joe Biden only talks about things that he pretends to see. He does not have the war experience. John James does. He served in the military, successful in business, now serving in Congress in Michigan, now on Foreign Affairs, Energy and Commerce. Congressman, I wanted to get you to comment first off on the president's decision not to send 2,500-pound precision bombs over to Israel.
I've been to combat, and I know the only thing that these Iranian-trained groups like Hamas, Hezbollah, and Houthis understand is a warhead to the forehead. There are only certain things that that terrorists get, and Joe Biden's appeasement, starting with the Iran nuke deal, further with billions of dollars in payments to Iran, and further exacerbated by refusing to enforce sanctions that Congress has already passed, is further emboldening our enemies and jeopardizing the livelihood and the existence of Israel.
So are you surprised it came to this? We
Absolutely
thought it was going to be threats?
No. See, this is what happens. And we've heard this for centuries. That an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. And right now, after watching the retreat, the Joe Biden's weakness for 3.5 years, our enemies see this as their chance. They see this as their chance to replace America as the preeminent world power. They see this as a chance to wipe out Israel. They see this as a chance to continue colonizing Africa, to push out into the South China Sea, and to retake Europe. And America is asleep at the wheel because Joe Biden is Sleepy Joe. And they use every aspect at their disposal. And under Joe Biden, it's open season on America.
So here's what he said yesterday on CNN, Cut 13. Does he understand what's going on these campuses? Cut 13.
Absolutely. I hear the message. Look, two things. First of all, there's a legitimate right to free speech and protest. There's a legitimate right to do that, and they have a right to do that. There's not a legitimate right to use hate speech. There's not a legitimate right to threaten Jewish students. There's not a legitimate right to block people access to class. That's against the law.
But here's what they're saying outside. Cut 12.
Baby killer! Baby killer!
Biden, Biden, you can't hide!
Biden, you can't hide!
You are funding genocide!
You are funding genocide!
So these misled mutants are out there everywhere. We're talking about 80 campuses. Those people just follow him around wherever he goes. So he's saying, I want to win them over by stopping weapon systems to Michigan, to Israel to try to win Michigan. Are those people persuadable?
Look, we can't be surprised. Joe Biden did this. Joe Biden and his ilk did this. For generations, they've allowed leftists to twist our children's brains, teaching them that the Constitution is broken and that capitalism is evil. And now we're supposed to be surprised when our children are chanting death to America. These are seeds that were sown by leftists, and this is a harvest that's being reaped by our enemies, Iran, Russia, the CCP. Right now, the roosters have come home to roost, and this lies squarely at the feet of Joe Biden and the leftist Democrat activists whom he leads.
I want you to put people in your house and the Democratic Party, but in the House of Representatives are to the left of the left. I mean, you think that they're a member of Hamas like Rashida Tlaib of Palestinian descent, who always thinks Palestinians first over Americans. More horrible accusation. Listen to her. Cut 23.
They've been telling us stop funding a genocide. All across Gaza, the medical system has been deliberately destroyed intentionally. That is a war crime. Students are putting their bodies on the line to demand their university divest from the same weapon manufacturers that are sending bombs to murder innocent children in Gaza. We will not stop in defending these students until this end is going to happen in regards to the genocide. It must end. Until there is an immediate permanent ceasefire that includes complete withdrawal of Israeli forces from Gaza and the release of all hostages and arbitrarily detained Palestinians.
So she also wants Benjamin Netanyahu arrested by the International Criminal Court, and she actually doesn't really ever think about America first. Now, all of a sudden, the squad has got some constituents. A lot of people there are now supporting the squad. Cori Bush, AOC, her, Jamal Bowman. You see these people. What do you say to them?
Look, these are the same people who said Black Lives Matter. Well, how about this? Why don't you use your thumbs, right? How many black people have died in cities run by Democrats since Joe Biden took office? Why don't you look at where you come from? Why don't you look at fixing America first? Why don't you take a look at what it takes to fix our inner cities and to make sure that everybody, regardless of race, color, or creed, can succeed in America rather than supporting policies from leftists that send our jobs, our opportunity to overseas? Why don't we look at what it takes to secure our border right now? Right now, in the past week, we apprehended 1,000 Chinese nationals. Over the past every year, $1.6 billion in human trafficking funds go to cartels who are in control of our border. We're losing Ruby Garcia, Lake and Riley. We're losing cops in cities all over the country. And nothing about the deaths of Americans as a result of failed Democrat policies. We have an obligation to protect all life, but we have to start at home first. And these people are completely, they've had their minds twisted by this Marxist ideology that's an American last ideology, and we can't stand for it.
Oh, I'm surprised it's happening right now. I know it's going to be very tough to win any seat at any time in Michigan, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. But knowing, John James, that the President Trump would be even tougher on Hamas, be even tougher on the Palestinians, be even more in their Israelis' court, why are so many people in Michigan exercised on Biden? And what should the strategy be in your state for Republicans?
Well, people in the state of Michigan, the top issues here, of course, immigration, inflation, and people see that Joe Biden is beholden to the activists. He's putting activists over auto workers when he sends our jobs over to China and Mexico with his terrible EV policies that will decimate the automotive industry, which is 50% of our GDP, and will fine auto workers, our union workers, from their bonuses for their terrible policies. Joe Biden is prioritizing activists over allies in withholding munitions that Israel needs to survive in order to have his own political benefit. Joe Biden is putting activists over Americans in allowing this open border. And in fact, of the over 500 people who've been apprehended who are on the FBI watch list, 86% of them are over on a northern border. Michigan is a northern border state. And we see this. This is why the polls that Biden selectively mentions, has his job approval down 17% and Trump is up in Michigan. It's because we've seen both. We recognize that groceries weren't 30% more back when Trump was in office than they are now. We recognize that people had the unemployment rate that was lower. We had a secure border, and people are looking and they recognize that we did have peace in the Middle East, normalized relations between Arabs and Israel, and we didn't have a war in Europe. People are looking at Trump, and they're looking at Biden in Michigan, and the choice is clear. If you want stability, if you want economic mobility, then Trump and Republicans are your answer.
So John James is our guest. And John, before I let you go, you have your success in business. Now you have your success winning the congressional seat. You have success as well as in the military. But your party has not been successful. They've been tearing each other's eyes out from the ouster of Kevin McCarthy on down. And then yesterday, Marjorie Taylor Greene goes a petition to vacate, supported by 10 others. Republicans. Now, there was no problem as Democrats rallied to Johnson's side, and most Republicans did. But what do you think about Green's effort, and what does it tell the American people when they ask who should lead the House by the way you guys have led?
You know, that's a great question, and we always fixate on the minority, but less than 5%. Less than 5% voted to table a motion, right? And so what does that mean? That means 95% of Republicans were squarely in the corner of governing and getting the most conservative legislation possible to the Senate. Right now, H.R. 1, that's the Securing Our Energy Act. That has been sitting on Chuck Schumer's desk since last spring. H.R. 2, Securing Our Border, has been sitting on Chuck Schumer's desk since last spring. We are pushing conservative legislation through. We are following regular order, and we're doing the work of the American people. And we should not let the less than 4% opportunistic gadflies take us off track. We need to focus on getting Donald Trump back in the White House, taking back the Senate, and holding the House of Representatives so we can govern and get this country back on track as quickly as possible.
I like Congressman Cuellar, but he's in trouble right now, and there's some serious indictments there, taking $600,000. But you ousted George Santos, and everyone's like, okay, Republicans even rallied and said, we got to get rid of this guy. He's an embarrassment. But now you get rid of but nothing changes for Cuellar, and nothing changes for Senator Menendez, who had gold bars in his closet. The second major investigation. What do you say to people who listen? There's got to be a double. There's a double standard here.
Well, when that goes through ethics and when that comes to the floor, then we can deal with it. But I'm always what's good for the goose is good for the gander. And right now we're living in a two-tier justice system. Growing up as a black man, I've seen that. And I think that people of all races, colors, and creeds are seeing how right. That's playing out with Donald Trump in the courts right now. You have Democrats who are saying that they're going to defend democracy. Meanwhile, they're trying to kick a man off the ballot, seize his assets, and take away his freedom, and then make the Electoral College illegal to stifle your voice. We have to do everything that we can to make sure that is equal protection, equal justice under the law for everybody.
Gotcha.
And so we're going to take a look at everything that comes, and we're going to make sure that we prioritize the needs right. And the best interests of the American people.
Congressman John James, thanks. Best of luck in reelection. When we come back, let's talk to Darryl Johnson, three-time Super Bowl winner, now an executive with the United Football League, running those operations, Fox broadcaster. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. As you know, it's a big week here on the Brian Kilmeade Show, 14 years old now. And for the first time, we're on in Dallas and with this great station, KLIF. It's got this rich history, and no one has to tell anything about Dallas to Darryl Johnston, where he, among the great accomplishments he had as a starting fullback, the three-time Super Bowl champion, a Dallas Cowboy legend, and now running the United Football League, XFL and USFL United. And he thought, well, while I'm not as a Fox broadcaster doing my own business ventures, why don't I head up that league? It's called the UFL, and it's doing great. Darryl, welcome back.
14 years. What the hell took you so long?
Sorry about that. Yeah, I mean, we finally broke through. I had to convince people of Texas I'm okay. It's not easy when you're born in New York, Darryl. You know that.
No, but I saw the turnout last year in Fort Worth on the book tour. So we respect you down in Texas.
Yeah, I'm thrilled to be down there. What do I need to know about the city?
Everything takes you half an hour to get to, so don't be late. You know, give yourself a little bit of time. It's the one thing nobody talks about in the DFW area is traffic. But it's a little spread out, and it gets a little slow at times. Nobody merges. Do not turn your directional on if you're going to change lanes, because as soon as you do that, everybody speeds up. Nobody uses their rearview mirrors. The driving is probably the most challenging thing in Texas from a guy coming from the north.
So, Pete, out of all the things you'd expect this fantastic football player executive to talk about, I didn't think I was going to get traffic. Should I use the Waze app? I mean, couldn't that have solved this problem? So Darryl, you've seen this city grow, right?
Yes, amazing. Amazing since 1989 to where the Metroplex is right now. It's unbelievable. And, you know, the downtown Dallas and, you know, the transformation there with Klein Warden Park connecting uptown to downtown, what they've done out in Fort Worth, and then all the you know, communities that surround the DFW area, just to watch them grow. It's been unbelievable, unbelievable.
So for you in particular, is this one of these cities like Los Angeles where no one's from the city, that everyone, are they from different parts of, or is it because it's you have such opportunity there, the growth is there, people come from outside?
Yes, very business friendly. You meet a lot of people from the West Coast, from the Northeast, from the upper Midwest, but you've got your born and raised Texans, which are tremendous people. And, you know, that's become our favorite saying as my wife from the Philadelphia area and me from upstate New York, we weren't born in Texas, but we got there as soon as we could.
I love it. And by the way, you have the same thing the Yankees have. Winning is not enough. Winning everything is what it's about. So there's a little bit of frustration for the Yankees in the Bronx and a little bit for Dallas in Dallas for the Cowboys, because as good as they've been, they winning it all is all it is. So I guess there's a little bit of frustration. I want to talk about the UFL if I can. It's really provided great entertainment for people who love football in the spring. And now with the merger, you're stronger than ever. Look at these TV ratings. Last week, you got over 1 million. You're just about 1 million with Michigan, Arlington, St. Louis and Houston, Memphis and Birmingham. Is this what the forecasters want? Is this what you predicted?
I think it's always a little bit of an unknown. I think we were all a little bit nervous because everything came together last minute with the merger. We didn't get some of the TV windows that we would have hoped for. We had a lot of competition in the local markets. I think that's probably our biggest challenge right now is attendance at our games. And I think a lot of that this season had to do with going head to head in St. Louis with the Cardinals, you know, going head to head in DC with the Nationals, you know, having an established sporting event going on at the same time as ours, which will be better with next year when we do the scheduling and making sure that we have the lead time to stay off those. But yeah, to have those numbers, you know, starting your season on Easter weekend, then having the NCAA semifinals, having Caitlin Clark on Sunday, having the Masters the following weekend. It's been great to see these numbers bounce the way they have. As you pointed out, last weekend we averaged almost 985,000 across the four games, which is an 81% increase from last year. So this is the one I want to see. I want to see the viewership and the attendance for the St. Louis Battlehawks at the Birmingham Stallions. I mean, we've got 6-0 versus 5-1. We've got two quarterbacks that are playing really, really well. Our two most talented teams by far. Neither one of them beats themselves. This is going to be the game that really, you know, can establish what spring football is all about this weekend.
St. Louis has got the best attendance. Birmingham may be the best team. It's UFL. It's still XFL, USFL sense. There's Birmingham, Houston, Memphis, and Michigan in one. And the XFL conference of St. Louis, San Antonio, D.C., and Arlington. It's fun. I love when things start up. I love to see the talent out there, that people are getting in more opportunity. And it's great to see in the spring. Darryl, congratulations. I know how hard you work doing this. I wish you all the success.
Thank you so much, Brian. I wish you all the success. Great to have you in Texas. Welcome.
And we'll be in June. And we'll be there in June, and I hope to see you in person. We'll drag you down.
Absolutely. I'll be there.
All right. Fantastic. It's Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move. Best is yet to come. We have the latest from the trial and so much more.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. I am glad you're here because I'm here. Mark Thiessen standing by. Mark Engelish, a criminal defense attorney, is also standing by. Why? Because Stormy Daniels back on the stand. We're going to find out the latest on Trump's trials and the trial that he has to go through. Well, Joe Biden's creating a lot of problems for himself and for the country, in my view. We're going to go over all that, and we're getting some emails from the courtroom to update everyone on how it's going, because they're finally getting to the heart of the matter, we understand, and they're talking about the money, how she got it and who she got it from and what she knows about it, because that's all that matters. The other background stuff was only salacious to possibly run down the president's reputation. So before we get to Mark, big three time.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
All these cases, for slightly different reasons, are collapsing. But the one thing they do have in common is that they were all brought as an effort to interfere with the election, to try to throw their chief political opponent, President Trump, in jail for the rest of his life.
Yeah, that's what it seems like. Trump trial back in action. Stormy on the stage. Michael Cohen, maybe just a few days away. We review and preview, because the president got some really good news as it relates to the other cases.
Number two. Consumer confidence, maybe no surprise, is near a two-year low. With less than 6 months to go to Election Day, are you worried that you're running out of time to turn that around?
We've already turned it around. Look, the polling data has been wrong all along.
Really? Is the election over? I didn't know that. The polling data is wrong all along. 2024 heating up as Joe Biden gets grilled on CNN, much to his surprise and anger, while making up stories about his life while raising big bucks in a godforsaken place like San Francisco today.
Number one.
I've made it clear to Bibi and the War Cabinet they're not going to get our support if in fact they go in these population centers.
So it's not over your red line yet?
Not yet, but it's we've held up the weapons.
So that means it went over the red line, Joe. Betrayal, simple as that. Biden brags about holding back armaments from Israel in the middle of a war for their survival as he paid homage to the radicals radicalizing all these roiling these college campuses and the extreme left, who the squad was out there full strength yesterday. And that's, I guess, who he really cares about. Mark Thiessen joins us now. Mark, so many ways to go. But first off, on the president holding back weapons shipments, this must enrage you.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, first of all, so, you know, he gave this speech on Holocaust Remembrance Day and didn't mention this and said in the speech, we're going to stand with Israel even when we disagree. He had already made the decision to withhold those weapons before that speech, but they withheld the news because they didn't want to disrupt, because they wanted him to be able to give a pro-Israel speech. He lied. You're not standing with Israel if you're withholding weapons from them. You know, so he literally went in the gave a speech where he wanted to get pro applause from these pro-Israel crowd and lied to them and said he was standing with Israel when he had made the decision to betray Israel. So, I mean, it's absolutely outrageous.
So he never tells people that Hamas took the hostages and we have to get our hostages back. They're there. He never tells people that Sinwar, the bin Laden of this operation, is there. He never tells people that if Hamas is not eradicated, they will strike back again in the next 18 months within that, and that can't happen. He never tells people that we're taking our numbers from the Hamas communications division. That's it. There's an excellent chance. I'm getting reports that it's 21,000 dead, that 14,000 are Hamas fighters in a dense area like that. That is remarkable. I want to hear from military people who understand urban fighting, not Jake Sullivan, Anthony Blinken, or a guy that makes stuff up.
So here's the thing. He claims, you know, he went out in that speech and he criticized the protesters and said that they're, you know, intimidating people and made these great statements. All that's fine, but he supports the protesters because what are these protesters demanding? They're demanding an immediate ceasefire, a permanent end to the fighting, not to go into Rafah, for the U.S. to stop providing weapons to Israel. Biden is doing all those things. He's pushing them to not go into Rafah. He's withholding weapons. He's telling them he wants a permanent ceasefire. I mean, literally, he is advancing through his diplomacy, through his pressure tactics, every goal that the protesters are laying out. So, why, if you're a protester, why would you stop?
So I want you.
It's working. You're putting pressure on Biden. Biden's putting pressure on Israel. I almost said Bibi, but I want to call this out because people always say this. It's not Bibi. It's a unity government. The opposition is part of the government. Bibi can't do anything without the opposition agreeing with him. There's no division in Israel about any of this stuff. The people who hate Bibi, the people who love Bibi, all want to go into Rafah. There's no division. The only place there's division about this is in the Oval Office.
And no, exactly. They have disagreements about where the country's run, but not about the war, how the war is being fought.
Exactly.
So here's President Biden on CNN yesterday. Erin Burnett did a fantastic job. But here's an example of him trying to explain himself. And I can't wait to get your take on this. Cut to.
When I went over immediately after that happened, I said to Bibi, don't make the same mistake we made in America. We want to get bin Laden and we'll help you get Sinwar. But we went into Afghanistan it made sense to go get bin Laden. Made no sense to try to unify Afghanistan. Made no sense, in my view, to engage in thinking that in Iraq they had a nuclear weapon. Don't make the same mistake.
So that last sentence, engage in Iraq because they had a nuclear weapon, what are you even talking about? Number two is everybody knew they had thought they had weapons of mass destruction from Al Gore to Bill Clinton, including him. And that's why they went back in, because they lied the first time. Number two, don't miscalculate what Afghanistan was. No one wanted to unify Afghanistan. They just didn't want to have the terrorists come back. And whether we made mistakes along the way is one thing. But since when have we come to a conclusion on either one of those operations? And number three is they have no choice. They got to get this guy and they got to wipe out Hamas like we wiped out Al-Qaeda.
No, that's exactly right. And the way Donald Trump wiped out ISIS.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the model. The model is what Trump did with ISIS in Iraq and Syria, where he took away their caliphate and pushed them out. I mean, they still exist. but they don't have any. They don't control territory. They don't control a government. They don't get. That's what we need to do. To Bibi needs to do to Hamas what Donald Trump did to ISIS. And here's the thing that Biden doesn't seem to understand is that if Bibi doesn't succeed in getting rid of Hamas, this is going to happen over and over again. Hamas has said, we will repeat October 7th not once, not 10 times, not 100 times, not 1,000 times, but 10,000 times. Hamas does not believe in a two-state solution. They believe in a one-state solution. They believe in the destruction of Israel, and they're not going to stop until they get it. So the only way you can have lasting peace in that region is if you destroy Hamas. And so, you know, the idea that and this is this problem with Biden is he doesn't want to win anywhere. You know, he's doing the same damn thing in Ukraine, where he gives the Ukrainians enough weapons to stop Russia from winning, but not enough weapons to beat them. And now he's doing the same thing to Netanyahu, where he's saying, well, we'll give you weapons to defend yourself. You have a right to defend yourself. But if you actually want to go in there and actually destroy these people, we're going to hold back weapons and we're not going to give you what you need to do it. It's the same damn strategy.
It's loser. You alienate everybody. The people that want Ukraine to win feel as though we're pretending on Biden. We're depending on Biden to execute a good war and with adequate support. And the people that they want to show that the support's not worth it, they get exactly what they want. So he pleases nobody. Same thing with Israel. Do you think that people on campus are going to vote for him now? Do you think these lunatics on the left like Tlaib and Cori Bush are going to support him now? So I want you to hear what Trump said. Whatever you think about Trump, you know exactly where he stands. That's what he said 20 minutes ago.
What Biden is doing with respect to Israel is disgraceful. If any Jewish person voted for Joe Biden, they should be ashamed of themselves. He's totally abandoned Israel, and nobody can believe it. I guess he feels good about it because he did it as a political decision. You have to do the right decision, not the political decision, but he did a very bad thing.
So you know exactly where he stood. And the thing is, too, I just watched John Lovitz. Just a comedian, been on SNL for years, did a bunch of movies, got his own comedy club. He said, I'm Jewish. I voted for Democrats my whole life. I'm rethinking it all. And I'm wondering how many people he speaks for.
I hope a lot of them, because, I mean, Joe Biden is a disaster. And, you know, there was this kerfuffle a few months ago where some Israeli journalists came in and Trump said, Bibi's got to end this thing. And they were like, oh, no, he's saying the same thing as Biden. No, what he means is take the gloves off and kill these people and end it.
Yeah.
He doesn't mean like end it without victory. You know, Trump's critique of the whole war on terror wasn't that we, you know, well, he didn't want to go into Iraq, but it wasn't that we went into Afghanistan, is we didn't go in and win. We're Americans are sick of losing. We're going to win so much where you're going to be sick of winning. You know, that's what the critique wasn't that we were actually engaging in the world and fighting the bad guys, is that we weren't doing it well enough. You know, I mean, Donald Trump, this is the guy who whacked Qasem Soleimani, who bombed Syria not once but twice to enforce Obama's red line, who warned the North Koreans that if they kept threatening us, he was going to unleash fire and fury, the likes of which the world has never seen on them. After taking out Qasem Soleimani, told the Iranians in a tweet that he had picked out 52 targets in honor of the 52 hostages, and if they retaliated against us, he would take out 52 sites in Iran. I mean, this is not a guy who's afraid to use military power. And by the way, this is the guy who wiped out ISIS.
Right.
So, you know, he's not an isolationist.
So,
unlike
so,
some of his supporters.
And what they're doing now is you have the president of the United States, wherever he goes, he gets these people yelling Genocide Joe, wherever he goes. The other day they were outside his place ripping Bidenomics. And then you have David Axelrod, same thing. This president spoke yesterday, and he really got some tough questions from Erin Burnett, who had facts with her. And David Axelrod said this on the panel, cut 30.
I thought they spent $25 million mistakenly last fall touting Bidenomics and making the same argument that the president's making here. It is absolutely true. The world was plunged into an economic crisis, and America was plunged into an economic crisis by the pandemic, and we've come back faster than almost any other country. And he's right about that, but that's not the way people are experiencing the economy. They're experiencing it through the lens of the cost of living. And he is a man who's built his career on empathy. Why not lead with the empathy? And I think he's making a terrible mistake. You know, it may not be, if he doesn't win this race, it may not be Donald Trump that beats him. It may be his own pride.
Tell me he's not right. Tell me he's not right.
Well, he's not right in the sense that Joe Biden's policies are working. He's the one who unleashed the inflation. It was the American Rescue Plan. So basically, the pandemic was over and the economy was starting to recover when Biden came in, and he wanted to be able to take credit for it. So he threw $1.9 trillion of gasoline on a fire and unleashed the worst inflation in 40 years. And if you want to know why people are unhappy with Bidenomics, you can see it in two statistics. When Joe Biden took office, we had the highest level of personal savings in the history of the country. And that was because of the pandemic. People didn't have anywhere to spend their money, and they got all these government checks. Today, 3 years later, the highest level of personal debt in American history. Because of the inflation, people spent down all their savings, and then they started spending up their credit card debt. And we have now the worst credit card debt in the history of the country, just topped $1 trillion for the first time ever. So Americans went from having savings accounts full of money to an average of $6,000 of credit card debt. And oh, by the way, they're paying 30% interest on that because of the interest rate increases to fight the inflation that Biden unleashed. So they can't get out from under their credit card debt. So why would anyone look at that and say, Bidenomics is doing great?
So I want to talk about some of the shock on other channels when these polls come in time after time when it comes to the economy. Even when it comes to the threat on democracy, they looked at them as equal. They're now tied because no one's buying the January 6th mantra every day. Yeah, that was a terrible day, but they beat it up so much, people are callous to it. So this is a woman named Susan Del Percio on MSNBC. Listen to her try to read these polls and understand them. Cut 32.
Another thing interesting in this polling was more independents said that they worry about President Biden weakening democracy than Trump, 53% to 42%. What do you make of this?
I find it shocking, honestly. I can't make sense of that number. I wish I could. I wish I had some really great insight to it. But I don't know if it's an outlier or not, because the other numbers with independents and Biden are going in the right direction. So that may be it.
And they're running on that. They're running on threat to democracy. No one's buying it.
Let me enlighten her as to why. 91 indictments. 91 at the federal, state, and local level. Charles Manson had 10. Okay, they are indicting him for everything. They've indicted him over and over again for running for president because they're trying to stop him from running for president. They are filing civil suits against him to try and bankrupt him. They're trying to use the 14th Amendment to kick him off the ballot, which the Supreme Court knocked them down on. They are. If you want a threat to democracy, I'm second to no one in criticizing what happened on January 6th. But you know what we learned on January 6th is that our institutions held. Everybody did their job. The judges and the courts did their job in rejecting the false election claims. The state legislatures did their job in sending the electoral votes. Congress did its job in certifying the election. The vice president did his job in presiding over that. Everybody did their jobs because we have checks and balances in this system. The Democrats want to destroy the guardrails. The Democrats, their philosophy is Trump is such a threat to our democracy that we need to burn down our democracy in order to save it. And so Trump is the get out of jail card, the excuse to do anything they want. And guess what? People see that as a greater threat to our democracy than Donald Trump. So let's say he comes in and does things they don't like, the checks and balances will stop him.
You know, Mark, I hate to say it, but you have to go on MSNBC and explain to them what these polls mean. I know you're a Fox News contributor, but you have to go.
Talk to Arena Brigandi and see if they'll let me do it.
Let's go see if that'll work. Mark Thiessen, thanks so much.
Missionary to preach to the people of MSNBC.
Right. Just tell her it's my idea. Mark Thiessen, thank you. Washington Post is his column and Fox News is his playground. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The the fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
You dumb old you have the you bet old you. You're not sending weapons to Israel during a war while American hostages and hostages from 22 countries are still in that. You're not sending weapons now, you dumb fuck.
Michael Rappaport is angry. He's an actor. He just got canceled. I think somewhere I might have been Michigan. He was supposed to do stand up and they canceled him because they got too many people protesting because he's sticking up for our ally Israel. He's Jewish. He went to Israel. He saw the problem, saw the carnage, and he is motivated to get the word out. He is furious with Joe Biden. I know so many people who have told me that happen to be Jewish that said this is where the rubber hits the road, who's not Bernie Sanders. And I think that's Michael Rappaport echoes maybe without the delicacy that many would want, echoes a lot of people's thoughts. Outraged that they would do this. Outraged that people denied that they were doing this. So I got bad reporting. Now the president brags about it. Brags about it.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
I just want to let you know that we just filed a major motion in the appellate division concerning the absolutely unconstitutional gag order where I'm essentially not allowed to talk to you about anything meaningful that's going on in the case, and many good things are going on with the case. It shouldn't have been filed.
It shouldn't have been filed, but right now it's back in session today, and they'll have a lunch, and they'll go tomorrow, and they'll call it a week, and I imagine the president's going to put something on his schedule. So far, we could tell you this from the people who are writing down briefly what's taking place in real time. So the defense attorney who's asking Stormy to keep posting why she kept posting on social media about being instrumental in putting Trump in jail. They look at defense, the exhibit J43, which is a post from Stormy that says, she says someone called her a human toilet, and she capitalized on the joke in a post about the trial. The best person to flush down the orange is the orange turd himself. Stormy continues, that was hyperbole. She is not a human toilet, but she absolutely meant Donald Trump. When Trump was indicted in the case, Daniels tweeted about him being indicted. People asked how they could support her, so she tweeted the link to her online store. Defense exhibits of the tweets are pulled up. Daniels thanks everyone for the support. So many messages. And she talks about how to get stuff for Stormy. So what does that show? Why? What is defense up to? Let's bring in Mark Eilersch. He is a criminal defense attorney. Mark, welcome. What is the defense trying to do here?
Trying to show that she's void of credibility. Because they don't want the jury to believe that he actually had an affair with her, even though that has nothing to do with the underlying charges and whether he committed fraud. This is such a sideshow, a total distraction, and it's more prejudicial than probative, as we argue in court.
So what you want to do is you want to show she's in it for the money, right?
And absolutely. Okay. Just on that one side issue, so you don't lose your credibility when you say he didn't have an affair with her, you want it to look like, at a minimum, well, he might have, he might not have, but who cares?
Right. So how would you keep her on there? You want to show that she has personal animosity for him, that she has a reason to do it. But what the prosecution wants is the payment, tying the payments to Stormy Daniels and having her blurt out something like, I knew that that was a reimbursement, and this is how I know that Michael Cohen was telling the truth. Somehow linked to the payments, but so far I haven't seen anything about the payments.
They've had that testimony when they did the bookkeepers.
Yeah.
There's no question payment was made. This is all for prosecutors to bring in salacious details so that they can picture not the man in front of them, but a man laying on a bed, these are her words, posing for her in his underwear right before he had relations against his marriage. You know, that's all bad act evidence. And if we learned anything from the Harvey Weinstein case, be very careful, prosecutors, when you bring in bad act conduct that has nothing to do with the underlying charges.
Why?
Because if he's convicted, then you give more fuel to the appellate attorney to reverse the conviction.
So Daniels is on there now. What, if your prosecution, what did you hope she would, what did she do to help you and what did she do to hurt you?
She made the president look like a liar. We want him to look bad for the prosecutors. Okay. It's all just bad act. The defense, get in and get out. She said she hates Donald Trump. There's your biggest motive right away for lying. She also is a porn star. She has sex on video for money. It's not a leap to think that she might not be the most credible person. You've got what you need. Move on and let's focus on the real issues.
So who would be left besides Michael Cohen? I mean, Susan McDougal, experts have said they don't see the benefit of bringing her out. Do you?
No. I'll tell you what needs to be left. There needs to be, after Michael Cohen, who will be eviscerated, a rookie lawyer, the students that I teach at the university can destroy Cohen with what they've got. So what the prosecutors need, and I believe they better have, is some type of audio tape, some type of emails from Trump himself that absolutely prove what they're alleging. Some language like, yeah, well, it's going to really affect the election. We need to pay off Daniels, and we can't have anybody knowing about it. You know, if they don't have that type of evidence clearly evidencing a guilty state of mind, then what the hell was this case about?
But don't you have to, Mark, if you don't like my question, I don't take it personal, but don't you have to show everyone what you have before the trial starts?
Yeah, there's no trial by ambush. We learned from my cousin Vinny, you know, a stellar teaching tool that you're supposed to provide things to the right, but they don't have to disclose that to the media and to you and I. So the defense, they know what's there. So I don't know. I'm not part of the defense team. If I was, I would know if there's anything more than Cohen. My guess is there's probably not, but only if there is, would they avoid the condemnation from me that will come after they rest their case, and I wonder why the hell they would bring something like this without anything more.
So a couple of things are happening. Along the way, we find out that Fonnie Willis is going to undergo an ethics investigation, which she won't participate in, where people are going to grant Donald Trump's team their request to see if she really has violated her oath and eliminated, should disqualify herself, if she should be disqualified from the Trump case. She says she's not going to participate in any inquiry, but this is where do we go from here, being that the judge said they're going to reevaluate whether to leave her on the case or not?
The judge will make that determination, and then the case, likely there's not going to be any removal. The case will go forward, and if there's a conviction, that will be an issue on appeal.
Timing? You have any sense of timing?
No, because there's so many moving parts. I mean, the man's got, you know, four different criminal cases. You've got a system over there that's overwhelmed. Who the heck knows? I don't know.
The other one would be the documents case. And it looks like Eileen Cannon said, I'm going to grant these. I'm going to examine these motions. We're not going to do May 20th, obviously. But I don't know when this is going to start. What do you think happens there?
Not a tremendous delay, because it's federal court. I practice in federal court, and these judges who have lifetime appointments, they don't care what people think. You know, the public doesn't matter to them. They don't have to face reelection. So there'll be a brief continuance, but not much, which is really unfair, because no defendant should have to go from courtroom to courtroom to courtroom facing, you know, decades in the pokey. You know, that's pretty rough.
And Mark, as we look at this case, some have thought before this started, we get it done by Memorial Day. Are you under that impression?
I cannot predict how long the defense is going to go. I would tell them, keep it brief. Don't take on the burden of proof. The more witnesses you call, the more the jury erroneously thinks, oh, well, the defense took on a burden, and, well, the prosecution, they put more, so we're going to go with them. No. You make it a point of calling very few witnesses, including but not limited to telling Donald Trump, as much as you want to talk, sit there and don't say a thing. They didn't prove their case up to this point. I don't expect them to do it after Cohen. Just let us argue reasonable doubt.
All right. The other thing I could tell you is the defense is asking Stormy Daniels about her about the paranormal and claims that she lived in a house that was haunted. Stormy says a lot of the activity was debunked. The defense attorney came back and said if Stormy attacked the asked her if she attacked her boyfriend, the prosecution objects. The judge reminds the defense attorney his topic was discussed earlier and to move on. The attorney then tries to ask if the boyfriend thought Stormy was insane. The question was also objected to.
I mean, we were at the bottom of the barrel with Stormy Daniels being called and giving those salacious details. Now we're underneath the barrel discussing whether she's into ghosts or not. I mean, this is because a judge allows her to go into these details. Then the door is open and the defense can really bring up just about anything that, that bears on her credibility, her motive, her bias, her interest. It's just a freak show right now.
So for you believe that Cohen's got to be next?
Who else is left?
I know.
Right? He's coming up soon. And then there better be this magnificent, powerful evidence that corroborates Cohen that makes him look credible. Otherwise, you are going out with a whimper. You're going to look really bad if you're the prosecution and this is, and Cohen's your final witness. Heck no would I save Cohen for last.
And Mark, just for the audience to understand because it gets confusing, the objective for the prosecution is to prove that personal funds were used to pay off a woman or or to make payments in order to affect an election, right?
That's my understanding, and I think it goes further, though. It's got to be with a fraudulent intent, not, oh, I should have labeled it. Okay, now my bad. I just made a mistake. It should have been labeled, what, a campaign expense? That's what you think I should do? All right, I'll know that for next time, I guess. But labeling it a legal expense is something I would have said, yeah, that sounds more appropriate. So I think it's got to be a criminal intent, and I don't see it at this point. I don't think they're going to get there.
I just hope reasonable jurors hadn't made up their mind yet, and I guess that in your business, Mark, I guess you never know.
You never know. Oh, my goodness. The only thing you know for sure is jurors do strange things. Generally, they get it right, but you never know. And in a case like this, a case of first impression involving the former leader of the free world, there's total bias. There's potential book deals. There's stealth jurors. I would never trust this process. But, oh, well, we have to.
Mark Igelars, thanks so much. Mark's going to be an interesting day, an interesting week. I just wish whatever happens, get it over with so we can go back to life as abnormal as usual.
Absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Mark. All right. So that's the latest on the court. Obviously, we have a bunch of people in there in the courtroom giving us hieroglyphics, short sentences about what's going on. I'll relay them to you as I get them. At the same time, following the other breaking news, the campus chaos, as well as the ramifications of the president cutting off Israel. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Let me tell you something. I never, ever, ever thought I would say this. Okay, but I could promise you this right now. Smoking Joe Biden, cadaver Joe Biden, me and Michael Rappaport, I'm not voting for you. You're not getting my vote. And plenty of us also ain't voting for you, you f*** you. I said it once. And I'll say it again. This is why voting for stained Donald Trump, pig Donald Trump, is on the table.
So Michael Rapaport tends to speak his mind. If you heard on before, he is a stand-up comic. He's been in a lot of big movies, too, by the way, right here in New York. He's synonymous with the sports scene here in New York. And he's a big Democrat. And he's Jewish. And he can't go along with what's happening here. I want to hear from you, especially if you're Jewish. How do you feel about what's going on right now? Are you like Bernie Sanders and Senator Schumer, care about politics first, don't really care that much about Israel? Or are you offended forever and can't believe what we're all witnessing here? And what we're witnessing is the withholding of long-time order, well-expected, about to be delivered, 2,000-pound bombs with precision. They're precision weapons and 500-pound bombs. He says he won't do it. And the president's proud of it. So here's what his Secretary of Defense said, cut five.
So we've been very clear, Senator, as you know, from the very beginning that that Israel shouldn't launch a major attack in Rafah without accounting for and protecting the civilians that are in that battle space. And again, as we have assessed the situation, We paused one shipment of high payload munitions.
So, I mean, he can't believe this. This guy has been involved in the worst fighting in Iraq. He knows what urban warfare is. Educate the president. Educate these guys. You know they're not being ham-handed by doing it. You heard General Petraeus talk about it. You hear these experts at the War College refer to it. To fight in that environment is absolutely hellacious while avoiding citizens, killing of civilians. And they have to go into Rafah. There's no way. And the president of the United States is worried about this. You want to know what he's worried about? He's worried about these lunatics, these losers on his left. You want to hear what's going on? He hears these people screaming at his events, and he's hearing these people on the streets, and he's hearing these people on the campuses. Listen to this woman getting Miriam. Talk about the GW, the George Washington president, who's finally standing up and getting rid of the encampments. Cut 16.
President Ellen Granberg slandered and called for police intervention against her students and the D.C. community from her ivory tower, not visiting our encampment once. If she had come to see us at the encampment, she would have witnessed the value it provided the community, a microcosm of the radically different world we strive for.
So that idiot, that community, is the one who defiled George Washington's statues. That community is the one that surrounded the police when they showed up. That community put a Palestinian flag in George Washington's hand. Here's more from the press conference about the GWU prevention. This is Nene Taylor talking about James Comer and then Mayor Bowser. Cut 17.
I'm disgusted that we need to be here to tell our own mayor the same message. Comer is a Republican bully, and Mayor Bowser is too. Let me repeat that. Comer is a Republican bully, and Mayor Bowser is too. We should not have to be here today to tell our own mayor not to be complicit in arresting protesters.
Listen, you clown. You're stopping people from getting to class to studying for finals. People are paying upwards of $90,000. You're not listening to the cops. They told you to pick up the encampment, and you didn't. That's called following the rules. But these congressional, by the way, the AOC, I just watched her walking across the Capitol building, and she was telling people that the anti-Semitism is coming from the right. I mean, does anyone think that that's even remotely okay? Do you know anyone anti-Semitic on the right? Do you know anyone that's anti-Israel on the right? I don't. Maybe Tom Massey, because Tom Massey is different libertarian. Scientist tends to be a little off. But here's where Sheena Tlaib, she agrees with this. This is sitting congressman in Michigan, cut 22.
Last night, under the cover of darkness, when Mayor Bowser was set to testify before Congress, before our committee, police pepper sprayed, brutalized, and arrested nonviolent student protesters at George Washington University at 3 a.m. This is an explicit attempt to repress students exercising their First Amendment rights to protest their university's complicit actions in the on behalf of Israeli's government's genocide of Palestinians.
She always sounds like she's about to cry. She wakes up enraged. She's in the wrong country. I don't want any Palestinian refugees here. I don't care their situation. I don't want any professors here. They're asking for Palestinian professors, part of a deal with Northwestern, part of the deal at MIT, part of the deal at Rutgers. No, because they get up every day and they teach that Israel should not exist, that Israel's not on a map, and that the evil people are in Israel. You want that at the college level now? You want that over here? You want more of Rashida Tlaib's? But that's the president. You might say the Republicans are fractured, but they're transparent about it, too. They're way to the right. There's some way to the right. The Steve Bannons of the world, way to the right. Okay. I mean, selfish people like Matt Gaetz, I got it. Certain members of the Freedom Caucus can't please, but other people come around. A guy that was as conservative as anybody is Speaker Johnson. And they do go at each other. We know Congressman Chip Roy, but they're all sincere. They have disagreements. But this is worse. Because these guys are all conservative and these women are conservative. I don't know what these Democrats are. I mean, I have no idea who they are. In fact, I go back to when AOC said in a different time, and this is the only country where I would be in the same party as Joe Biden. We have such different beliefs. Listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome, everybody. What a day we're having now. We're seeing Senator Scott now speaking. He attended the morning session of the Trump trial. He thinks it's a circus. He's talking about that now. Why is Rick Scott there? A lot of it to raise his profile a little bit because he's in a tough reelection. I'm not sure who his opponent's going to be, but Florida's always tough, number one. And Val Demings came out after Rubio last time. She was tough. But Rubio handled abortion pretty well. He said, look, I'm for 0 weeks, but Florida's at 15. I'm going to go with 15. Now Florida's at 5 or 6. And it's going to be harder for Rick Scott because we just look at history. It's hard when it's on the ballot. It makes it tough for Republicans. That's just a fact. Congressman Dan Crenshaw standing by. Bottom of the hour, Victor Davis Hanson. Brand new book out called The End of Everything, How Wars Descend into Annihilation. And we do have a lot to discuss. So let's get to Congressman Dan Crenshaw now. Congressman, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. Good to be with you.
So we got up to this. Long rumored, now official. Cut one.
I've made it clear to Beebe and the War Cabinet they're not going to get our support if, in fact, they go into these population centers. We're not walking away from Israel's security. We're walking away from Israel's ability to wage war in those areas.
So it's not over your red line yet?
Not yet, but it's we've held up the weapons. We've held up the one shipment as an old shipment that was designed for. We've held that up.
Right. Whenever he's mumbling through, he says, to the 500-pound bombs, precision weapons, and the 2,000-pound bombs. He's holding it up. So why is he doing this, Congressman?
Well, I suppose their explanation is they don't like to see larger munitions used in more what need to be precision urban operations. That would be the military answer. I think the problem we see with that is, you know, for one, the Israelis don't have an over-reliance on these large munition weapons. Okay, so number one, they use a lot of small diameter bombs that really do minimize civilian casualties. They, as my understanding, and I'm not an expert on Israeli tactics, I'm on the ground with them, but my understanding is they operate much as we would, which is dangerous, meaning you got to put people in harm's way. Infantry and brigades in harm's way to properly clear out an urban area. You can't just carpet bomb it into oblivion. And while that's at more risk to your own force, that is designed to minimize civilian casualties. And third, they try pretty hard to evacuate those areas. They drop leaflets, they send out text messages, they do what they can to make it clear to the population that it's time to move, and you know, in the case of Rafah, they're trying to move them and back to the northwest areas. Now, don't get me wrong; none of this is great. I mean, war sucks. It sucks for the innocent civilians that have to keep moving and be displaced, and potentially not have a home to go back to. Because, of course, what happens is maybe they do evacuate, and then Hamas uses that apartment building as a fighting position, and then it gets bombed. So. None of this is good, but it is war, and it is the reality we live in. And people want choices, I think, oftentimes in these cases that just are not possible.
Congressman, how could you possibly fight this war and leave Sinwar alive and not try to take out the last two Hamas battalions when they say our goal is to do October 7th as much as possible? How could you possibly rationalize allow it not going into Rafah?
Yeah, and that's the thing. You don't have a choice. Yeah, and that's what I mean by these kind of false choices that people present. You know, you should be against, you should be for peace. It's kind of what people say about Ukraine too. You should just be for peace. Well, the enemy has a say in that conversation, and until the enemy surrenders and gives back all the hostages and surrenders, you don't have a choice.
Right.
You know, you had a ceasefire on October 6th, and then you didn't. And I don't like these two realities, these two potential realities. And here's the two potential realities. One is Israel does what it's doing, and it takes on these offensive operations to root out Hamas, root and branch. And the second option is they continue to allow Hamas to exist and continue to open themselves up to future attacks. And of course, we saw one of the most brutal attacks in Israeli history on October 7th. So. Those are the two options. There are no other options. And again, I don't like that fact.
Right.
But it is a fact. You got to deal with it.
If you're a leader, don't you explain that to people? Don't you understand that what Hamas's objective is? Don't you understand that how the Palestinians greeted those hostages when they were brought back from those kibbutzes into Gaza? They were spit on. They were cheered because they thought they did a great thing, taking 200 innocent people from 9 months to 90. And listen to Joe Biden. This gets you involved because he talks about the wars you fought. Cut to.
When I went over immediately after that happened, I said to Bibi, don't make the same mistake we made in America. We wanted to get bin Laden, and we'll help you get Sinwar. But we went into Afghanistan. It made sense to go get bin Laden. Made no sense to try to unify Afghanistan. Made no sense, in my view, to engage in thinking that in Iraq they had a nuclear weapon. Don't make the same mistake.
Your thoughts?
You know, this is actually why Obama didn't stop letting him into the meetings with respect to national security decisions about Afghanistan and about the raid on Osama bin Laden. Obama, I can't remember the exact words Obama used, but he said something. He reported to have said something about, you know, Joe Biden having a dangerous judgment, and you know, he was against the Osama bin Laden raid, actually. And so his instincts on foreign policy have always been very, very bad. With respect to what he's saying about Afghanistan, we should just go get Osama bin Laden, everything's fine. Like, oh yeah, just like that? Just like that? It doesn't work like that. You can't just go get him. I mean, you need forward operating presence. You need bases out there. You need to develop intelligence on the ground. There's a lot of support mechanisms that go into an operation. And a lot of these politicians who never served, and unfortunately a lot who have served, just don't understand any of that. And then so they lie to the American public. They make it seem like there's this like easy button out that we just refuse to take because, you know, we want to pay out the corrupt sort of war machine or whatever it is people say. And it's all BS. These things are hard to do and the choices are hard to make. And the world is a messy place and you're going to get messy trying to fix it. And it's never going to be perfect. And this is, again, so the situation is similar here in Gaza. You only have two choices. You let them keep attacking you, you let them continue to be a threat, or you don't. And you know, you've got to take and hold territory and then figure out what the political situation is after that military objective has been achieved. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Israelis are going to do. Just tactically speaking, withholding these weapons, is it going to really change the trajectory of this operation in Rafah? Probably not. They really do have what they need currently. They're going to continue to do it.
But it helps Hamas. It helps Hamas sell the story that America is leaving them, and that makes them look like the bad guys, and it makes it harder to even do a hostage deal. Don't you agree?
Yeah. And that's what I was going to end with is what it does do, even though it might not change anything tactically on the ground at the moment. It does a couple other things. One, it could potentially leave Israel more open to future attacks from, say, Hezbollah or another one from Iran, if they're now under the impression that Israel is going to be just have less bullets to shoot back. All right, you know, put it simply like that. So there's a deterrence factor that gets lost by this, but also it's a signaling factor, and it signals that Hamas's main goal here, which is winning this PR war, which is always how they fought these wars, and they do it very successfully. Is paying off, and that they should, and then they should keep doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the problem. Like if you're going to argue with the Israelis about their tactics, which by all means we should do, but it should be with your allies, with your friends. You should be doing it privately, and not in such a public way. I think the reason that Biden has decided to do it in this public way is to appease a voting population in Michigan where he's trailing Trump. You know, I do think that most of this is just based on cynical politics.
Dan Crenshaw, our guest in Texas, in a week in which we launch on Dallas, so we definitely got to get your perspective. We're continuing to grow the network here. Congressman, yesterday was Back to the Future. You had to vote on the future of your speaker again. Marjorie Taylor Greene and 10 others tried to get a new speaker and have the new vote because it went so well last time. What is your take on people who think you guys are, it is chaos on the right?
Well, yeah, I mean, there is and there isn't. you know, I tell people just stop commenting on their antics. It's over now. She got to give her little speech, which, you know, if you heard it, you can tell she wrote it herself. We'll give her that. Not professional. There was no professionalization of that language at all. So, hey, you know, authenticity where authenticity is due. But it was like, this was always a cry for attention. I mean, it was actually literally written into the motion to vacate remarks, which is that one of the complaints was that Mike Johnson, you know, didn't appreciate the unique and special needs and abilities of each member. I'm paraphrasing. It was something like that, but it was quite comical. And it was defeated just absolutely overwhelmingly, because everybody's sick of it. And, you know, they can try and spin that into some strange, like, as they always do, they'll try and spin it into some strange, you know, uniparty conspiracy. But in the end, the real uniparty is this far left and far right. That's the real uniparty. And let me tell you, let's talk about the voting record of that particular uniparty. Defund the military, defund law enforcement, defund the FBI, defund our intelligence apparatus, let Russia win, let the Israelis lose, don't give them any weapons. They all voted against that too. So, you know, that particular coalition is not a coalition I want to be a part of. That's the real scary uniparty, that far left and far right. Everybody should know that.
Yeah, I guess people are disappointed with no border money, but they didn't feel like they had the leverage to do it. And we'll see.
Let me tell you something. You know who voted? You know, Tom Massie, part of this motion to vacate. You know, he voted against HR 2. He voted against HR 2. And by the way, I'm like, yeah. He's like one of the few. He's one of the few members that actually voted against it. I'm sure he had. He's going to make up some reason. I'm trying to double check that, but. And 21 Republicans, by the way, voted against H.R. 2 when Kevin McCarthy combined it with a CR with a 30% cut to all spending. Remember, that was what happened the day before McCarthy was vacated, because he had to put on a clean CR. And the day before, 21 Republicans, in an effort to completely sabotage anything we'd ever want to do, actually voted against H.R. 2 plus a 30% budget cut, the most conservative possible thing you could put on the table, and they still voted against it. So what the game these guys play is they eliminate all possibility of having leverage over Democrats, and then they complain that we don't have any leverage over Democrats, and then they blame leadership. This is a cycle that occurs over and over again. It's occurring again with Mike Johnson. Mike Johnson had no leverage to now. Look, I mean, there's critique there. I tried to help him with this for months, but I was one of those who tried to do it productively. Put out exact policies on the border that I think Democrats would go for. We could actually make a deal on. Marjorie Taylor Greene never did any of that. Thomas Massie never bothered to do any of that. None of these people did any of that. None of them have ever spoken to a Democrat and tried to make a deal so we can actually get border security, because the truth is they don't want it. The truth is they want it more as an election campaign,
right,
to raise money on than they want to solve. The solution is terrifying to them, because then they don't have anything to talk about, because they're not that creative. Everyone needs to know that. I'll keep saying it till I'm blue in the face, because I'm tired of our voters getting lied to by this group of people.
But you think the majority do want it, right?
I think the majority of Republicans, want it. And we live in reality. And in political reality, look, a good strategy is combining your principles with political reality. And you have to operate within reality. You can write a fiction novel about some other reality where you just get whatever you want if you scream loud enough and make enough silly speeches. But in the real world, in a divided government, you got to try and make deals. And the only way to make deals is to have leverage. And the only way you have leverage is if you actually stick together. And so if you already signal to the other side that there's no way you'll be together, you will never have leverage. And that's effectively the situation we've been in for the last year or so.
All right. It's frustrating, but hopefully if there's a change in leadership in November, there'll be absolutely no excuses. Congressman Dan Crenshaw, thanks so much.
Brian, always good to be with you.
Same here. We'll find out. So Israel's alone. The encampment's won. They feel like they're making progress. It's only going to empower them. And guess who else is high-fiving? Hamas. Fantastic. Everything's backwards. Victor Davis Hanson's going to fix it all. But next is all your phone calls. I promise. Don't move.
Newsmakers and newsbreakers. Hear it first on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I'm a Palestinian American. My family's from Gaza. I've lost countless dozens of family members to the genocide in Gaza. They all were murdered at the hands of the Zionist state of Israel.
And how did it start? That was a student at George Washington University. How did it start? How did it start on October 7th? That's what happens. You come in and massacre innocent people. You kill a bunch of people who are at a concert for peace. And then you go in there and wipe out their families, burn their kids in front of them. And you don't expect retaliation? And you want people to feel bad? I feel bad if they're in harm's way, but 80% support the mission. If your family was part of the 80%, that's part of the problem. Nobody likes war. Israel did not want it. They thought they had turned the corner to the point where they dropped their guard. And I'm sure an investigation will reveal that. Ron, listen on WABC. Hey, Ron.
Hey, how are you, Brian?
Great.
I'm talking about how I'm going to bring up January 6th about the recognition they use, the facial recognition software they use to find people in all outskirts. And now we have all these people came over the border. Now we have all of these things going on at the universities. How much you want to bet they're not using that to find them? And if they are, they're not going to let us know, because just showing one picture of someone who came over illegally helping incite these riots will hurt their side, the side that right now is in power in this country. And I want to know what we can do about it.
I'm not sure what you can do about it. In terms of January 6th, the Democrats have totally overplayed their hand and over-arrested, over-indicted, and that's going to be the story if somebody else goes in there with a clear mind. They have. I can't imagine how many resources were taken away from fighting al-Qaeda, ISIS, Hamas, Hezbollah in our own country, maybe investigating people at the border in order to find everybody on January 6th. But I will say shortly, we're about to find out about who is actually here illegally and what kind of ramifications we're going to have in terms of terror activities in our country. And that's the problem. We don't know who's here. The president has totally left the back door open. We've abandoned our allies. We've shown lukewarm support for Ukraine. We've not delivered on all our weapons for Taiwan. And when the time is needed, we don't lead when it comes to Israel. We left. And now they look at our country and see all this unrest at our campuses. You see the Met Gala being interrupted with all the celebrities there. You see the overstretched cops and in some cases, firefighters who don't get paid enough. And now being chanted at KKK and pigs. I mean, this is an unbelievable series of events that happen. And I think a lot of it stems from a lack of leadership. Meanwhile, the person who is leading right now to be president is stuck in a courtroom listening to a porn star. Crazy times. Victor Davis Hanson.
From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
And you're telling me you're going to tell them how to fight the war? And what they can and can't use when everybody around them wants to kill all the Jews? This is obscene. It is absurd. Give Israel what they need to fight the war they can't afford to lose.
And that is Senator Lindsey Graham upset as a Secretary of Defense, obviously, like I am and probably you are, maybe you're not, that we're stopping a shipment of weapons into Israel. First time in our history that I can remember, let alone the new one, the $9 billion that we just allocated through congressional allocation. Victor Davis Hanson joins us now. He's a military historian, author of a brand new book called The End of Everything, How Wars Descend into Annihilation. Victor, welcome back.
Thank you, Brian, for having me.
Victor, your thoughts about America cutting off Israel?
Well, it's the same thing that the Democrats claimed that Donald Trump did when they had legislative approved military aid to Ukraine. And Donald Trump delayed it supposedly because he felt, I think correctly post facto, that the Biden family was corrupt and was influenced in the firing of a prosecutor. But in this case, it's pretty clear that Joe Biden is doing this for political purposes, that is, to appeal to Muslim and Arab voters in Michigan for the Electoral College consideration. So he's essentially taken legislative approved aid to Israel, and he's put a hold on it for political reasons. And I think if I were the Republicans, I would introduce an article of impeachment and use the exact same wording that the Democrats did against Trump, and just to make a point.
I hear you. I mean, obviously it won't pass. They got a slight margin. There's people that don't just want to go wrong with the Republicans anyway. But just to say, what are you doing? And this is an ally, and the world is watching. How do you know from all your with your rich military background? And we're not over there in Gaza, but we have a lot of people there able to report in satellite images. Do you believe that the Israelis going out of their way to kill just Hamas and avoid killing civilians? Do you think they're fighting this way, fighting in an effective way in Gaza?
Well, there's been a number of British, as you know, and American military analysts who's looked at the Hamas figures and run statistical audits on them and then looked exactly. Brian Kemp is one. I mean, Kemp is one of them. And there's another person at the Navy War College. And they've adduced that no urban force that was trying to root out terrorists, not the Americans in Fallujah, not the Americans in Mosul, surely not the Russians in Chechnya, surely not the French in North Africa. No one has ever dropped leaflets, sent text, and probably had a one-to-one ratio between those who were killed that were terrorists and those who were civilians as collateral damage. And we got to remember the central truth, Brian. Had Hamas, after October 7th, just agreed to turn over the architects of that murder and release the hostages, Israel would have never gone into Gaza. And that was after they had already sent 7,000 rockets deliberately intended to kill Israeli civilians. But all they have to do now is they can just say, stop, we want to have Hamas give back the hostages, turn over the architects of the killing, and Israel would probably stop. And they won't do that. And our administration is culpable for allowing this to go on.
In what scenario can you allow this guy Sinwar to live and not be captured for these two Hamas battalions not to be confronted? I mean, why doesn't the administration bring that up and say they have no choice? They have let it be known. That's not a one-off. They want to do this every day. They want to do October 7th every day.
They say that. They've said that in Lebanon. They've said that in Qatar. The four or five leaders in their war council have said that they wanted to. We have people on campuses at Columbia that said it's going to happen. We wish to for 100, 1,000, 10,000 October 7th. The people have said it at every campus. But just imagine this. If Joe Biden had a 20% lead in the polls in Michigan right now in the 2024 election, and the campuses were absolutely quiet, you think he would have cut off aid to Israel? No, of course not. It's blatantly political, and it's in the same context as he's now decided to start draining the Strategic Petroleum Reserve again. He's told the Ukrainians do not hit Russian oil refineries before the election. He's forgiven billions of dollars in student aid. This is a comprehensive plan to appease every particular constituency in lieu of his confidence of just obtaining a majority of voters, which he can't do.
He's slow walking weapons into Ukraine, making it extremely hard to support the war effort. And even though I think it's the exact right thing we should be doing, he's doing the same thing half measured in Israel. He's stopping them from fully going after Iran. They're reportedly a week or two away from a nuclear program. Why that doesn't seem to bother this president, I don't really understand. So he tries to straddle the line on everything. And the guys leading the charge, Anthony Blinken and Jake Sullivan, I mean, can you compare that to Colin Powell and George Shultz? I mean, even if Republicans or Democrats, you want to be able to look over there and say, that's experience. Does anyone think that these guys are the ones who makes us feel better about our foreign policy?
I don't know, but they're oblivious to the fact that any time the United States deliberately distances itself from Israel, somebody comes in the void and tries to start a war against them. And that's been true. So this administration came in. They restarted the Iran deal negotiations. They lifted the terrorist designation of the Houthis. They restored U.N. money via the United States. United States money via the UN, I should say, to the Hamas and Palestinian Authority terrorists. And then they put on ice the Abraham's negotiations. And in that void, that abyss, Iran said, my gosh, the United States is not going to do anything. Let's tell Hezbollah to start sending in the rockets, tell Hamas to organize an attack, because then we'll ignite the campuses of the Western world on fire. And this is exactly what they're doing. And we're going to make it worse. The more that we distance ourselves from Israel, mm-hmm. the more likely Iran will be to attack, and Hezbollah will send rockets. They're already sending rockets in today, more rockets, on news of this suspension. And I think it's illegal, too, because we've already approved the aid. It's been approved. It should be going there, and he stopped it for political purposes.
Anytime the terrorist regime is high-fiving after your decision, you know you made the wrong decision. Victor, your book, The End of Everything, How Wars Descend into Annihilation, where did this idea come from, and does it apply anywhere today?
Yeah, I think it does. I was always curious in the years I've been writing about military history about these rare instances when a loser or the defeated power state empire is not just given unconditional terms or surrenders, or is recalibrated or forced to make changes, but is extinct. It becomes extinct. It's erased. And I don't mean just its physical space, its people, its religion, its language, and within 20 or 30 years, it disappears. And there's cases in history. So I looked at classical city-state of Thebes that Alexander the Great erased, Carthage that Scipio Aemilianus erased, Constantinople as a Hellenic, Christian, Greek-speaking civilization in Asia Minor was erased by Mehmet and the Sultanate of the Ottoman Empire. And then I looked at Cortez's erasure of the Aztec Empire. And I wanted to see if there were commonalities, and if they were relevant today? And there were. All of these, this is kind of eerie, all of these states or empires at one point had been very formidable, and they were in a state of financial decline, they were a state of cultural decline and political decline, and they weren't really aware of it. They pointed to their walls. Seven-gated Thebes, the walls of Carthage have never been breached. The Theodosian walls at Constantinople cannot be traversed. Mexico City had the most sophisticated system of locks. It was on a lake. It was considered impenetrable. And they didn't understand anything about, in that case, who Hernan Cortez was, just like the Carthaginians said, you know, Scipio's an intellectual, Polybius the historian is at his side. He wouldn't do this. Alexander the Great, the Thebans thought, well, he's a student of Aristotle. Mehmet had the greatest library in the Islamic world. So what I came up with is when states are threatened existentially by enemies, they often discount it and say there's no way it can be possible, or we're the United States, or we're powerful, or we've never been threatened like this, and they don't take it seriously. And most of the times they're correct not to take it seriously. But if you look what's happening in the contemporary world, China has promised to erase Taiwan and say that it was a bastard child. It should be reabsorbed. There is no such thing as Taiwanese. We've seen that Iran has said that Israel, 20 years ago, Iran said it's a one-bomb state, and it was a lucky thing that it's a Jewish state, because half the world's Jewry are now in one place and can be eliminated. The most disturbing was Recep Erdogan in Turkey has said that one day the residents of Athens, Greece, will wake up and they'll see a storm of rockets coming down on them. And he's also said to the Armenians who were just ethnically cleansed from Karabakh in Azerbaijan, he said, well, we have a plan for these Armenians, and it's what our grandfathers found successful, which was a genocide. He said the same thing about the Kurds. He's also said that the nuclear weapons at Isilik Air Force Base that we have and own are not really ours. And during the coup 6 years ago, he cut off power to the U.S. base contingent and said, do not remove those nuclear weapons. And then, of course, we have, I think I counted 17 Russian generals, politicians, or media figures said there would come a time when they would have to use nuclear weapons to correct the mistaken notion that there is something called independent Ukraine. And I could go on, but people take this very serious. The Chinese publisher that usually translates my books It's got a huge market in China. It gave me an ultimatum, and they said, either you remove that paragraph about us threatening Taiwan, or we're going to cancel the contract. So I had to cancel the contract with them.
Wow.
Because they were very sensitive to it.
So, are you sensitive to us? How does it relate to America, this strong superpower? And are we ready?
No, we're not. We're borrowing, Brian, $1 trillion every 90 days, every 3 months. We're going to borrow $4 trillion. We're going to be $36 trillion in debt. And more importantly, we're 45,000 recruits short in our military. We were humiliated in Afghanistan. We let a Chinese balloon traverse for 14 days our continent. We've got the red, blue, left, right dissension in the country. We have an exploding homeless population. It's not that the border is porous. It's non-existent. We know that fentanyl is killing 100,000 Americans a day. It's deliberately done so by imports into Mexico by China. So we're not. We have no deterrence abroad anymore. And people are coming out of the woodwork who would never be threatened. North Korea's back launching missiles, threatening people. Turkey's on its hind legs now, really aligned with Iran and Russia. Putin went into Ukraine. He had never, he went in the three of the last four administrations. But we know that he didn't go in during the Trump administration because he felt Trump was unpredictable and had a deterrent against him. So we're in a very precarious situation, and we have the same attitude as the ancients that I studied, in that we deny it. We're the Americans. We made the post-war order. We're the place everybody wants to go. We have the preeminent universities, technology, and I'm not sure any of those things are true anymore.
Well, that was not uplifting, but it's also a warning sign, too. I mean, all this stuff that you mentioned is correctable. Path to correcting, if not immediately. Number one, little things like putting ads to recruit people, make it cool and productive to get into the military. Have an incentive. Yeah. You become a better person. You go to college, as well as you fight with the best fighting force in the world, as well as you enforce our border. We know the plan to do that, and we know how to hold ourselves on the world stage. We actually have a NATO that will listen because they are alarmed about their security. Under the right leadership, we could begin to turn this ship around. But the main thing is that debt, and we have to get the American people on board to fight it together. It's possible.
Yeah. And well, the thing that I think you make a good point, they're all self-inflicted wounds. If you look at the essentials, we've got the oldest constitution, 233 years. It's stable. We're the world's, we have the largest, we can be the largest producer of natural gas and oil and coal if we want to. We have the most efficient agricultural sector in the world. And even now, in the decline of our elite universities, we still have the best engineering programs, math programs, physics programs in the world at places like Caltech or an MIT. But these are self-inflicted wounds, and if we were to have a change in political direction, I think we could restore, we could get back to where we should be very quickly.
Victor, real quick, I'll get to break. You know Trump well. You studied him. You know history better than anybody else I've met. Do you think that a Trump second term would be better than his first?
Yeah, I do. I think he understands that he wasn't prepared. He didn't have help within the Republican Party, and now he's enlisting various think tanks and advisors. So if he were to be elected, he might win the Senate and House. He would hit the ground running, get rid of all of these political appointees, as the Democrats usually do, and get 10 to 20,000 people who are audited with background checks. So you wouldn't have a Scaramucci or an Omarosa, that type of appointment. And I think he would do it very quickly. And I don't think he would get people who were disloyal, like anonymous, or tried to undermine him from within. So I think he's learned a lot, and he's got a lot better people, I think, in his campaign around him this time around. And there's people that served last time, a Robert O'Brien, a Mike Pompeo. There's people in the Senate like Tom Cotton. All of these people are now much more favorable to Trump than they. And I think he has a whole repertoire he could draw on.
Lighthizer, too, is another star. Go pick up his book. They're always great. The End of Everything. How Wars Descend into Annihilation. And Victor, you're going to join me on Saturday night on One Nation. Thanks so much, Victor Davis Hanson. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Got to here to wrap up the hour in just a moment. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. a talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
The economy, of course, matters, but our fundamental freedoms and our very democracy matter as well. And that's what the voters are telling us. And so we're going to continue to talk about the contrast of visions for where we want to take this economy, whether we're going to want to continue to build it from the middle out and the bottom up, as Joe Biden knows that we need to do. Or are we going to return to the failed trickle down approach that Donald Trump tried, where it was nothing but handouts to the super rich and corporations?
I mean, have you ever heard something so inaccurate? Michael Tyler, Biden campaign communications director. You could say that. I mean, you might want to. Does Donald Trump not give you enough to criticize? You think that he was handing out giveaways to rich people? He was cutting regulation. This is it. His tax rate. It was corporate taxes. Corporations have people in them to make us more competitive with other countries. The top rate got 1% off. The most people that benefited was middle class. It has not been possible in modern times to build from the bottom up. You need people creating. Unless you're looking at a socialistic economy, you can't have working class build it up. You can build up through the working class, but you need someone on the upside building, creating, innovating, structuring, competing. And that's what happens. Joe Biden wants to make it seem like it's working class against upper class. He thrives on that. Do you know what he also said about inflation? He says it's grocery store owners gouging. I mean, always it's somebody else's fault, except for the little guy. He's for the little guy. Hey, I want to see you in person. Talking about winning the war in history, History, Liberty, and Laughs Tour. Indianapolis, Indiana, Shelton Auditorium, June 29th. And then on July 27th, Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. It's fun. Live on stage. VIP opportunities remain.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.